Okay, members, in the interest of time, we'll begin begin our committee meeting. Call the meeting to order. We have a quorum. I'll accept a motion to approve the minutes. Representative Murphy moves the minutes. Any questions on the minutes? Any comments? Seeing none, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, and the minutes are approved. Today, members, we'll be hearing from our new Commissioner of Health and his staff about the Department of Health and all the good work that they do. And we'll open it up for questions as we go. And I'm sure you'll learn a lot. There's a lot of new people over here and a lot of experienced ones over here who can help each other out. And with that, Commissioner, do you want to lead things off? Welcome you to the testifying table, the hot seat. Welcome to the committee.
Thank you very much. Representative Gottwalt and members of the committee, I'm Dr. Ed Ellinger, the Commissioner of Health for the Minnesota Department of Health. And I understand that the technology is not working quite yet, so you will have to follow along on handouts. We have a handout sheet with the slides on it, and it reads from left to right, hoping that very shortly the PowerPoint slides will be available. I'm going to be giving you an overview of the Minnesota Department of Health, and I've been accompanied by several of our key staff that I'd like to just have you be aware of, that Gene Donaher is the deputy commissioner is here, our two assistant commissioners, John Linkstein and Craig Acom. Barb Julich, our chief financial officer, is here. Kristen Lonkerich, our director of legislative relations, and Matthew Colley, legislative coordinator, and Jim Golden, director of our health policy division, are all here. One to see how I present and then make sure that they're here for any questions that may come up that I won't be able to answer after 1 week on the job. But as we start off, I'd like to highlight the fact that public health and health is really a public issue. It's a public good. And that health is public good, and it is reflected. It's been known for a long time. This quotation from Herophilus of Chalcedon, who is a physician to Alexander the Great, said, "When health is absent, wisdom can't reveal itself, art cannot become manifest, strength cannot fight, wealth becomes useless, and intelligence cannot be applied." These are all things that are really important to this state. And if we don't have health, we really can't do all of the things that are necessary in our society to really have a productive and a society that really benefits from being here. So the state also recognized that health is an important aspect of the state, because one of the first things it did after being incorporated or becoming a state in 1858, the Minnesota legislature authorized the towns and cities throughout the state could enact public health regulations for the control of communicable diseases, one of the first acts of the legislature back then. And followed up by in 1866, making the Township Board of Supervisors the Board of Health for the townships. And then in 1872, Minnesota, as a leader in public health, became the fourth state to develop a Board of Health, following Massachusetts, California, and Virginia. And I think that really harkens to the fact that Minnesota really has anticipated and recognized that public health is an important part of what government is really responsible for. And then in 1977, it changed from a state board of health to the Minnesota Department of Health. The Board of Health was abolished, and it was changed so that the powers and duties of the board were then transferred to the Commissioner of Health, which then became a gubernatorial appointment. And at the same time, the CHS Act, the Community Health Services Act, really established local public health agencies and solidified them with some landmark legislation throughout the country on making local boards of health an important part of the public health mechanism in the state. And so given that, what is public health? And I'm going to give you a little bit of background on the thinking about public health so we get a sense of how the Minnesota Department of Health functions within that. And generally, people have traditionally thought about public health as a parallel system to medical care. Medical care focusing on the care of individuals, public health focusing on the health of populations. And for a long time, I mean, that is accurate, but sort of at the extreme. And a little bit later on, I'll tell you how that is changing. But looking at the principles of medical care and public health, you can see the difference between medicine and public health. Both are based on science. Certainly medical care with all of the advances in research and technology. But public health is also based on science. Epidemiology, biostatistics, all of the things that go into public health, really science-based. But public health focuses on populations. Medical care focuses on individuals. Public health focuses on health as both an individual and a societal responsibility. Medical care, dealing with individuals, sees it mostly as an individual responsibility. Public health, recognizing that a lot more goes into health than just medical care, has a really broad definition of health. So it includes the physical, the mental, emotional, economic, educational health that really contributes to the well-being of individuals, whereas medical care really focuses on specific illnesses or diseases. Public health, given that broad definition, and a little bit later on, its collaborative nature, really is interdisciplinary, multidisciplinary, lots of kinds of specialists, professionals related to it, whereas medical care has become increasingly specialized, where people know more and more about a smaller and smaller piece of medicine. Certainly, one of the hallmarks, public health focuses on disease prevention, health promotion, injury protection, whereas medicine focuses on treatment. And public health has a long-term responsibility. With prevention, we're really looking at what's happening long-term. What can we do for the sake of our population long-term? Whereas medical care is really trying to cure this disease, cure this illness. Certainly manage for the long-term, but really trying to get some results in a very short period of time. Public health really focuses on social responsibility. How do we use the resources in the most effective manner? How do we get the biggest bang for the buck? How can we really make effective use of resources? Whereas medical care really traditionally has been reimbursement driven. What gets paid for oftentimes is what gets done. And public health really focuses on social justice. The definition I use for social justice is that everybody needs to get their basic needs met, and no one should benefit at the expense of somebody else. And this relates a lot to what we're going to be focusing on in terms of health disparities and health equity, that we really need to make sure that everybody benefits in our society. Whereas medical care is more in a market kind of situation than public health is. And this relates a lot in terms of how we classify diseases and injuries. And if you look at death certificates, one of the things that the Minnesota Department of Health is responsible for, you look at the causes of death on the death certificate, you'll have these top 10 causes of death: heart disease, cancer, stroke, all the way down the line. And you can see the large numbers. But if you look at what's behind these, what are the real causes of death, you start to see the things that public health has been concerned about. The real causes of death are tobacco use, which kills about over 400,000 individuals in our country. About 18% of our deaths are related to tobacco use, because it's relationship to cancer and heart disease and stroke. Diet and inactivity, also a major contributor to deaths. About 15% of our deaths in our society are related to inactivity and poor diet. Alcohol, microbial agents, toxic agents, firearms, sexual behavior, all of those are really the precursors to what happens that eventually gets listed on the death certificate as a cause of death. And these are the things that public health has been focusing on. And you can see, if you look back, this is a list from the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention, which looks at what over the 20th century, what were some of the major contributors to improving of health in our society? And it's things like immunizations and motor vehicle safety and workplace safety, control of infectious diseases, healthier foods, a lot of maternal and child health activities, reducing tobacco use. So these were the kinds of things that public health has really put its hat on, staked its reputation on, and has really shown in the last 100 years, because if you look at the longevity, the life expectancy at birth from 1900 to 2000, you can see that we gained about 30 years of life, and about 25 of those years were really due to public health accomplishments, clean water, reducing infectious diseases, reducing injuries, and have huge benefits. You can see the one kind of area where it really did decline was in 1918, 1919, when we had the influenza epidemic. And you can see the impact that a major epidemic can have on life expectancy. And again, this is something that the department is certainly prepared for and continuing to prepare for in case we have some kind of emergency, some kind of outbreak like that. But you can see public health has really been the major contributor to the increasing life expectancy in our country. In the last several years, public health, as we've focused more on chronic illnesses and not so much acute and infectious diseases, even some of the public health activities related to cancer screening and blood pressure screening and mammography and tobacco use has really helped to slow increase the life expectancy, even in this age of chronic diseases. So public health has a role to play both in reducing acute diseases and in limiting the trauma and carnage of chronic diseases. But as we've gone on and starting to see into this chronic illness kind of phase of our society, we start recognizing that there are lots of other factors that influence health. And this slide points out the fact that if you look at all of the contributors to health status, things that influence health status, healthcare, medical care, really only contributes about 10% to the overall picture. 40%, the largest thing, is behavior. Individual behavior, lifestyle choices is the major contributor to health. Then there are certainly genetic predispositions that we have. Social circumstances like your economic status, your educational status, the status of your community, and then 5% environmental exposures. So these are the things that we're now starting to recognize as the complete picture of things influencing health. Medical care certainly is very important, but it's a small piece of the overall puzzle. So we're starting to think about health in more of an iterative, interactive kind of way, where we really look at the determinants of health on that individual within a society, that individual's biology, that individual's behavior, influenced by the physical environment, influenced by the social environment, and then certainly intersected and affected by the various policies and various programs. And certainly access to quality health care is one of those things. So that we really need, if we're going to look at health holistically, if we're really going to look at how it affects an individual inside, we really need to look at all of those determinants of health. And certainly as we see this going along, we also recognize that we can't separate treatment from prevention. This is a slide from Dr. Hurt at the Mayo Clinic, who's been dealing with tobacco use, and it's a perfect example of if we just focused on prevention. This is starting in the year 2000. If we just focused on prevention of tobacco use, we really wouldn't start to see the effect on longevity and life expectancy and mortality for about 20 to 30 years, because it takes that long for prevention in this area to really make some difference. But we also need then to start with treatment. We need to do smoking cessation kinds of things so that we get the benefit of the immediate smoking cessation and we get the benefit of long-term smoking reductions. So this is one way of telling us that we really need to start thinking about both medicine and public health, treatment and prevention in the same breath. And so that's why the definition that's now being used for public health throughout the country from the Institute of Medicine is that public health is what we do as a society collectively to assure the conditions in which people can be healthy. It doesn't say anything about doctors or nurses or nutritionists. It really says that all of us in our society have a role to play in public health. So that is the nature of how we're moving ahead with public health in this day and age.
Well, we have a question, Representative Murphy.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Commissioner, can you just help us, can you tell us who the Institute of Medicine is, please?
Well, thank you. Yes. Representative Gottwald and
yes, Dr. Ellinger.
The Institute of Medicine is part of the National Academies of Science. It is an organization that really looks at a whole variety of health issues. In 1997, they looked at that public health and did an in-depth analysis of the future of public health, and from looking at getting input from around the country, kind of solidified what public health should be doing and sort of promulgated this new definition of public health, which was much more inclusive of the issues that we're facing society today.
Representative Liebling.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Dr. Ellinger, I just a quick clarification. On your slide that has the real top causes of death, You've got motor vehicles at 43,000, which is less than the one above it, sexual behavior, or I'm sorry, less than firearms, for example, but it gives it as a percentage being lower. I'm thinking there must be a typo there?
Or is First of all,
Dr. Ellinger.
Chair and members of the committee. Obviously, the order needs to be rearranged. They're less than 1% of the overall population, so a percentage of deaths.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Liebling.
Thank you. Dr. Ellinger, but I don't see, how can 43,000 be less than 1% when 29,000 is 1%? That's what I'm not understanding.
Okay, yeah. Representative Gottwald.
Dr. Ellinger.
Representative, I believe this must be a typo. What I had were some earlier numbers and asked to kind of update the numbers and obviously did not do the checking of this as closely as I should have.
If you can proceed, Dr. Ellinger.
So with this definition of health, what we as a society do collectively to assure the conditions in which people can be healthy, we're kind of re-looking at how we look at health. And so really look at the health of the public as the ultimate goal of what we have. And we have all of the health care activities related to that, which means the medical care, the clinical preventive services, which are some of the screenings, some of the educational, some of the clinical services that can be done in a preventive service that can be done in a clinical setting, and then all of the community health services, the educational, the environmental, the injury prevention kinds of things that we do. Those really are part of the healthcare piece of ensuring the health of the population. But then we have all of the other influences that really influence health, and we're learning more and more about the fact that education, the economy, housing, scientific advances, social norms, transportation, the media, the sense of community all play in to the health of the public. And so that's, which then brings us to what I'm here to talk about is the Minnesota Department of Health and how it fits into that. And with our mission to protect, maintain, and improve the health of all Minnesotans, we're really kind of highlighting what I said was what the role that the public has, what government has, in trying to assure the conditions in which people can be healthy. And both state and federal constitution reflect the fact that government has a role in protecting people's health. And it's in this state, there's a shared responsibility between the state and local government in doing that. And through this, we encourage people to do things that benefit their health. We require certain entities to do things right that have an impact on certain health, on individual's health. And we work with a variety of partners to develop programs, to develop policies, to assure that people are healthy in our society. And so with that in mind, I really see the Minnesota Department of Health as playing a lead role in kind of portraying that different kind of picture and leading the charge for public health in the state, that can lead the charge for health and health care, but also all of the other agencies, all of the other components of our society that also have some influence on health. And so the department really works with health care and health care agencies, but also with other departments in state government, local government, and businesses and agencies throughout the state, focusing on what can we do to improve the health of individuals. And we do this with some of the core functions. Those are up on the left, the assessment, identifying what the problems are, looking at the data that shows what issues are out there, that one of that core functions of public health. Also the policy development, what are the appropriate policies that really can help prevent diseases and help people to remain healthy. And then the assurance piece, to make sure that people have access to the services, but also assurance that those services are of high quality. And that is all of those are all components of what the state health department does in this state. And then we also take it from the realm of how we do it. We really focus on disease prevention, health promotion, health protection, and surveillance and monitoring as some of the major activities that the department has. And so in this state, there's a unique partnership between the state health department and local, both local government and local agencies. And the public health system in Minnesota, it really is one of the best in the country. And it's from the outside, up until a week ago, from the outside looking in, I could really recognize that the state health department was a premier agency. But now being the commissioner, and as I get to know more and about what's going on and drill down deeper, I'm really impressed with the quality of staff, the expertise that's in the department, the kind of work that they're doing in all agencies, and I'm becoming, gaining an increased respect for the work that the department has done. And I really respect the fact that it is built upon a strong partnership, between local public health agencies and tribal governments, but also a partnership with businesses and other agencies that really focus on health. And because of that, Minnesota really consistently ranks as one of the healthiest states in the nation. And we, since these ratings began, we've always been in the top six. But one thing that is of concern is that we have started to slip a little bit in those ratings. Even though we're still in the near the top, there are some things related to disparities in public health funding that are starting to threaten the infrastructure. Outcomes are still great in the state, but sort of the infrastructure to support those continually good outcomes are things that we have to be concerned about. And certainly let's start, and I'll go through fairly rapidly a variety of things that the department does on a daily basis, and certainly one of those is birth and death records. And I start with this one because this is really when someone is born, this is sort of their first involvement with the public health system. And data collection, statistics, the birth registry is one of the most important functions that we have. And this is something that there are, you know, over 75,000 births and 38,000 deaths that occur in this state each year. And our Office of the State Registrar issues over 750,000 birth and death certificates and processes over 35,000 corrections and amendments to those birth and death records each year. 750,000, which says that if you got everything right exactly 99.99% of the time, there'd be still over 7,000 things that may have gone wrong. And we're trying to have zero faults, but and I say that because you may get some calls from folks about birth and death records. And these are really important documents. The, you know, with the whole focus on identity theft, these are valuable documents, important documents. They have to be handled with all respect and security. And our processes have been automated, so we handle these very securely but very efficiently. And in fact, the Minnesota Department of Health has reduced the time it takes to process requests for duplicate birth certificates by more than 80%, from 6 days down to less than 1 day. So I bring this up. It's a big thing that the department does, but it is something, because of the large numbers, you may get some feedback from your constituents on this. Also, one of the more visible ones is the around-the-clock monitoring of infectious diseases. We have epidemiologists and a world-class public health laboratory that are doing assessments on a daily basis. For example, tracking where West Nile cases are, or following an outbreak of salmonella in a food product. These are the kinds of things that certainly get a lot of attention at the local level, at the state level, and at the national level. And once we identify those, our department has a very effective and swift response to outbreaks and public health emergencies throughout the state. This is an example of what happened in Slayton in 2007, where over 2,000 individuals got received immune globulin because of a hepatitis A outbreak. Again, something very important to the community, very important to everybody in that community, that we responded to in a very quick and effective fashion. And then, because the world is constantly changing, and it seems like the organisms, the bugs, are adapting much quicker than most anything else is, we're always looking out for novel kinds of illnesses. We work a lot with our partners at CDC. Certainly, we work with our partners at the University of Minnesota and Mayo Clinic and local health departments throughout the state, and also with other health departments, trying to make sure that if something new comes up, and a recent example was the progressive inflammatory neuropathy from the workers in the pork plants. And the work done by the department recognized that the way that they were cleaning or they were removing the brain tissue aerosolized the brain tissue and caused this problem. Started a worldwide look at what this this problem was to see if there were other efforts or other places where this was a problem, working with the World Health Organization, CDC, and because of the work that was done here, there really has been a change in how pork is now processed and has eliminated this problem since that time. So it just is an example of how we're on the cutting edge of a lot of things that are going on with public health. Also, I mentioned the influenza in 1918. We're continually preparing for any kind of public health emergencies. It happened, you know, with H1N1 in 2007. We're certainly working continually to monitor to make sure that we're ready with lots of training. We've worked with the legislature to develop a legal framework for responding to these kinds of things. We're sharing information and doing exercises with our partners throughout the state. We're looking at establishing, we've established a antiviral stockpile so that if there is something that happens, we have medications available for immediate delivery. And certainly planning a lot with hospitals and healthcare systems so that we can have all of the health facilities ready and up and running very quickly if there is some kind of an emergency. We have Minnesota Responds, which is a database of about 7,000 healthcare workers who are willing to step forward and help out with any kind of emergency if it happens. We've clarified the responsibility between the local, state, and regional facilities. We've developed guidance materials. We've figured out ways that if there's a shortage of oxygen or emergency room beds or hospital beds, how to deal with that. So all of this planning needs to go on an ongoing basis with continued education and continuing updates. And certainly one of the areas that we also perform a lot of work, and this is with immunizations. As the State Health Department, immunizations is a huge effort to reduce disease, prevent disease, and we have a very high level of immunization coverage in this state. And this is also one where we work with partners, and prior to my coming on to be the Commissioner of Health, I was a member of the Minnesota Immunization Practices Advisory Committee. When I worked for the City of Minneapolis, I represented local public health. When I worked for the university, I represented college health. And the department has multiple advisory committees to help with some of the programs that they have to make sure that there's community input, make sure that there's expertise from various sectors in the community that help formulate the programs and the policy recommendations that come forward. Immunizations is just one example of that. Another area that we have a lot of work on, and it's really become increasingly important as healthcare costs have continued to increase with our health economics area. You can see on this slide the healthcare costs in Minnesota have really been rising at a rate that outstrips the Minnesota economy or per capita income or inflation and wages. So this is an area where we have lots of data, we have lots of information, we have done excellent analysis of this because it'll be so crucial as we move into health reform discussions about, you know, the kind of insurance products that need to be out there, the kinds of healthcare things that we can do to control healthcare spending, what kind of capacity and utilization we have within our system. We also look at adverse events to make sure that what is happening out there is of high quality. And we also work on a lot of these issues related to rural health and safety net kinds of care. And this will help us as we really move to the health reform and working on health reform over the next couple of years to really focus on improving population health. That's one of the issues that I really think is important for us to understand. As we look at health reform, it's there not to just improve the insurance product. It's not just there to reduce the bureaucracy. It's really there to improve the health of the population. So we have to make sure that we have everybody involved, whether you're covered on a public program or a private program, whether you're old or young, whether you're educated or uneducated, we need to make sure that everybody's involved, because if we're going to improve the health of the population, everybody has to be involved. We also have to make sure that we reward value, not volume of services, so with a lot of care coordination, a lot of incentives for providing quality care. And we have to make sure that everybody understands what's going on, so that there's transparency, that we know what the quality is, we know what the cost is. And we're doing lots of work through our programs, our policy division, our health economics division, health reform areas, to try to make sure that we get that information out to folks in an understandable way. And certainly one of those areas is our nursing homes and hospitals and other care facilities. We have approximately 687,000 Minnesotans receiving care during the year from either a nursing home or a hospital. Lots of people involved with facilities that we have responsibility for monitoring and assuring that they're providing high quality care. And so this is, again, one of the assurance functions that we have as a department. Along with that, making sure that we assure that people in rural areas get the services that are necessary to maintain their health. And we have an Office of Rural Health, which provides a forum for addressing rural health care issues across the state. And it helps coordinate things related to health shortages and what's the workforce that we need if we're going to really have a healthy state. And also looks at a statewide trauma system, because the trauma throughout the state, getting people into care as rapidly as possible, is a certainly one of the indicators of survival and of reducing morbidity. Certainly an area where we have a large program, as it's the Supplemental Food Program for Women, Infants, and Children, better known as WIC. You can see that the number of individuals who've been on WIC over the last several years has been increasing. It's an important example of the work that we do with families and children in a whole variety of areas. We have a major maternal and child health focus on making sure that people get a good start in life, that they're healthy, that they have good nutrition, that they're able to learn. So this is a huge area, again, where we spend a lot of time. One of the other areas that is chronic illnesses. Certainly at the beginning of life, we want to make sure kids have a good start, but as people start to age, we want to make sure that we're dealing with the chronic illnesses. And certainly we are in a society that where chronic illness and chronic disease is becoming an increasingly important part. And this is just one example where we're looking at obesity as one of those. You also have heart disease and cancer and arthritis and a variety of diabetes. That we have the data to look at who's being affected by this chronic illness, and how do we intervene with that.
Dr. Ellinger, I might point out too, we're going to be having members in this committee some opportunities to see some great community models from around Minnesota about how we're addressing things like obesity. We've got the challenge now between the House and the Senate, mm-hmm. and anybody who wants to sign up is welcome to do that. I would encourage you to do that. The biggest loser between the House and the Senate, Dr. Elling, we're working on that. Maybe we'll have you as a judge or a tiebreaker or something like that. Representative Murphy.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and Commissioner. Earlier in your remarks, you mentioned, and I wrote that down because it stuck out for me, the age of chronic disease. And now you're making reference again to chronic disease as... And as you're framing it, it sounds like you're talking about it as something unique or different, given where we are in time. And I'm just wondering if you could expand on that a little bit for us.
Yep.
Please.
Dr. Ellinger.
Representative Gottwald and Representative Wade. As I had mentioned in this slide, looking at longevity, first part of the 20th century was acute illnesses and injury, and the latter part is really more chronic illness. And that's where we're starting to recognize that the same kind of interventions we had with infectious diseases won't be as effective with chronic illnesses. That acute disease epidemiology, we need to maintain that because there's always that risk. But we now have to look at other approaches to deal with chronic illnesses. And this is where some of those social determinants of health, these are the things that really are not medically related, but you know, what's our transportation system like? Because it helps people to walk more, be more physically active. What are our neighborhoods like so people can get out and play? What is our diet like so that they don't become obese and then develop hypertension or diabetes? So we have to change the way we do things, and we're going to have different partners, because this is chronic illnesses. Yeah, you can treat some of the side effects of the chronic illnesses in the medical care system, but to prevent this, you're going to be needing other partners to do that. You're going to need the school systems, and you're going to need businesses. As you mentioned, the biggest loser is coming from the Chamber of Commerce and the business community, recognizing that this is an economic issue. This is a business issue. It's not just a health issue. So that's changing the way we focus on that. That's why I think we also need to think about our health reform, that instead of thinking how we need to treat things, we need to start thinking about how we prevent things. So how can we really bring medicine and public health together to work in partnership so that we prevent things from happening in the first place, and then if they do happen, to be able to intervene appropriately? What I think one of the best examples of this partnership was the Freedom to Breathe Act, where physicians really recognized the fact that they were seeing patients in their clinic that were really being devastated by tobacco use and secondhand smoke. And so took the lead, you know, at the local level and then the state level, saying, we need to have a policy for, you know, keeping people from being exposed to secondhand smoke. So the physicians saw that it was in the best interest of their patients to do some of those public health efforts. And that's where I see where we really need to go in the future, is that merging of medicine and public health. And I think health reform in this state, given all of the work that we've done with the quality indicators, the cost indicators, and with a public health perspective, can really kind of merge those two in ways that are not being done in any other state.
Thank you.
Representative Fritz.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and I just wanted to comment on your last, on the Freedom to Breathe Act, and I'm just thinking back to my nursing career, and I just toured my nursing home again in Faribault, where we have a vent room for folks who are coming in, and I had noticed in my 30 years there that we had a wing of people on nebulizers, and that had increased so much from the use of tobacco, and now we are bringing people in and ventilating them. So I, you know, why does it take us so long? Why do we have to get so bad, you know, so ill before we begin to find a preventative means? And the Freedom to Breathe Act is here, and of course we do have that, and I just wanted to make that comment.
Thank you.
Well, I might add as well, Representative Fritz and members, we have a whole lot of work to do on changing our personal behaviors and lifestyles in the area of healthcare. The top driver of healthcare costs is what? Utilization, and a lot of it around chronic disease. So I appreciate your comments, Dr. Ellinger, Representative Fritz. Representative Abler.
Thanks. I'm sorry I've been in and out a lot. Maybe it's been addressed. But in this statewide health improvement program, and I was chatting with somebody who was hoping we could do more of it in the future, and you do have a Department of Health Economics, so that's my preamble to this. We have a Department of Human Services fiscal guy who we have to persuade about value, and is there some way that you could show that there's some, you know, if we do more of this, that it actually gets us a bookable savings? Mm-hmm. That could be a homework assignment, but I'm just kind of curious.
Yeah, I will Dr. be Representative Gottwell, Representative Abler. We have the Statewide Health Improvement Program on this slide, and it is one of the things that is a model in this country. It was based on what CDC has shown to be an effective way of addressing chronic illnesses and changing behaviors, and has a economic model that shows that you can really save money by dealing with obesity, physical inactivity, tobacco use, and alcohol use, and that this program, Statewide Health Improvement Program, which is in place throughout the state because of the funding from the state, has really demonstrated how that can actually be functional and be working. And really, it is part of what we're seeing as health reform, that this needs to be part of that merging of medicine and public health, that if we're going to really get ahead of the cost, or have bending the cost curve for health expenditures, because there are data. I don't have those right here with me in terms of the potential impact that we can have on that.
Representative Huntley.
Well, Mr. Chair and Representative Abler and Dr. Ellinger, I will say that it's most of what we did in the SHIP program, the savings were out 10 years from now, so Mr. Hoffman would not give us any credit. But about the governor's healthcare transformation task force in 2008, their plan, if we had implemented everything, would have saved eventually 20% healthcare costs, and half of that was due to public health activities. So it is important, and but getting George to put that savings there is something else. But I would say, Mr. Chairman and members, that business really understands, big business really understands the importance of healthy behavior of their employees, and they put a lot of money into it. And if they're putting in money into it, you can bet that they know that it pays off in the long run.
Well, Representative Huntley, we're going to have the Business Healthcare Action Group and some other groups in front of us to talk about exactly that. So it's interesting the connections we've got here. Representative Abler.
Well, thanks. And just to follow up, but just, you know, we have the, you know, he's commissioner's in his first month. He doesn't know what we can't do here. So if he did, you know, bumblebees can't fly according to engineers. And so maybe if I throw just a difficult task instead of an impossible one in front of the commissioner, he could do some homework. So yeah, it's good luck with that.
Yep.
Thank you.
Well, the point's being made that there are some short-term things and some long-term things. If we're really going to improve health, we're going to have to take both a short-term and a long-term view on this, because there is the intervention and there's the prevention. The prevention does take a little bit of time to kick in.
Representative Kiffmeyer has a question.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chairman. And Dr. Ellinger, I was noticing that on the top causes of death and the real top causes, and noticing that diet and activity and then the conversation that we're having right now as well, and also the context of your comments of how health has changed from the big waves of diseases, pandemics, and those kinds of things to now, it's changed over this period of time. And I would suspect if you had a chart possibly somewhere, we might be able to, if you take that span of about 100 years or so and see a bigger picture of how we are entering a new phase of even the health. But I remember that as a kid growing up, there was not a lot more outside activities, a lot more of walking and sometimes even being a little short on the sweet side. You know, we'd have baked goods on Saturday for Sunday, and that was it the rest of the week. And those things like that. And what happened, though, is that I think that as we became a little bit more ability as a society have more of these things, we traded off and lost some of that diet activity that were kind of intrinsic in our style, lifestyle that we had then. And I thought sometimes that we might consider school buses dropping kids off, not right at the door, but having a path that they could, you know, have more room. And so have you considered, I think especially for the young people, I mean, we as grown-ups have some choices to make and other things to talk about, but the young kids, as we're coming into this now, you know, some of this activity, I'm seeing some signs of that, but especially I think physical exercise can often compensate for overeating, obviously. But I see a lot of the issue on some of the diets. But building into our lifestyle, school style, home style, encouragement. So have you considered that as well in some of your plans for the future? I'm suspecting you just might have.
Dr. Ellinger.
Mr. Chair, Representative. Part of what SHIP, the Statewide Health Improvement Program, has done is really been working with the schools on a whole variety of the issues that you just mentioned. Diet, exercise, how to get to school, safe routes to school, working with the families to try to change what the kids can bring home with help to educate their parents about healthy eating, eliminating high-calorie treats in the schools and what's in the vending machines. Many schools have really started to focus on high-sugar drinks in the schools. So those are all there. Also, we need to know more, and just yesterday had an event looking at this new study looking at children in children's health, a federally funded program, looking at what's going on now, what's happening in children's lives that are keeping them from getting a lot of exercise or altering their diets. So we know a lot. We've included a lot of this in the SHIP program. We will do more as we learn more. That's why I think some of the epidemiology that we do now will help us in the future for making the kinds of changes that you're suggesting when we have the data that says what works and how we can make those behavioral changes.
Representative Loeffler.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair, and Representative Kickmeyer. I was just going to say I met yesterday with representatives from Minneapolis SHIP program, and just a few of their examples addressed the sort of things that you were talking about in terms of, you know, the walking school bus, and they're talking about one of the middle schools in my area that they really got into active recess. And they actually have changed the school day. They used to have kids eat lunch first, and then they'd go out after they've ate, and they were kind of, you know, they'd tend to stand it around and stuff. They reversed it around. They got the kids out running. They restriped the asphalt playground, that's all they have there, for games that are more attractive to middle schoolers as opposed to elementary school kids. And so they're finding out that the kids are really active. And then they come in and have lunch. And so they've even changed the school day to accommodate those sort of things. They're working with almost all the child care facilities in my area to work with those child care providers on nutrition and activity levels for toddlers. So they're starting even before school age. So I think if you get in touch with your local SHIP program, you might find out that some of those things are happening in your area as well.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Please feel free to continue.
Well, the discussion around the table really had kind of highlights what's going on in this, is that the SHIP has really helped focus on policies, on programs, and environmental changes related to tobacco and obesity, nutrition, physical activity, and really has worked a lot with particularly on tobacco and obesity to reduce those major problems. And it's involving all 87 counties and the tribal nations. So that, you know, those chronic illnesses is one of those things that we really have to deal with. The other is the data that I mentioned, the fact that Minnesota is sort of slipping a little bit in the national health ratings is because of health disparities. We really have unequal distribution of health in this in our state. If you look at infant mortality and HIV infections and cancer mortality, teen pregnancy related to whites and populations of color, we really have some fairly startling discrepancies that we really have to address. And I think it's, as the data point out, is that this addressing disparities is really something that benefits all of us, because the data are showing that even the people at the top of the socioeconomic ladder benefit if the people at the bottom improve their health. It's not a zero-sum game. Everybody benefits if the people on the bottom are improved. So it's in our best interest for all of us to try to reduce these disparities. And that's one of the things that the State Health Department has really been working on, is trying to work on health equity or eliminating health disparities. And so our Office of Minority and Multicultural Health is having grants available throughout the state to work on these issues of disparities. And this is certainly going to, again, be one of the things that will be crucial for us as we look at health reform, is how to make sure, how to make sure that what we're doing benefits everybody in our society, not just a select few. Certainly part of the role of the State Health Department is just to provide lots of information and lots of encouragement to folks to make healthy choices. These are just some of the examples about how to wash your hands. And certainly the Cover Your Cough has been a campaign that has been picked up throughout the country, and lots of people are seeing the stuff that has been generated from the Minnesota Department of Health. And then certainly another area that's something that affects all of us, as I take a drink of water here, that I want to make sure that the water we drink and the food we eat is really safe. And water is a huge issue in the state. And it struck me, I did not realize this, that Minnesota seals more abandoned wells to prevent groundwater contamination than all other states combined, which really reflects the fact that water is so important. We depend on groundwater for drinking water throughout the state, that this is a huge issue and something that
that the department takes a lot of credit in for doing a good job of maintaining our groundwater, and also about all of the other risks that are there, chemicals and contaminants. I mean, we really work very closely with various Minnesota communities, the Pollution Control Agency, the Department of Agriculture, to really address all of the issues that relate to, you know, natural disasters, tornadoes, floods, dispersants of all sorts, chemicals of all sorts, really a collaborative effort. And I started with, you know, birth and death records. Well, you know, we also, at the end of life, we make sure that, you know, that the end of life is dealt with properly, respectfully, and in a healthy manner. So we work with funeral homes and crematories and morticians and funeral directors to make sure that everything is done right at the end of a person's life. So with all of that, I hope this leads you to sort of an understanding why we're not seeing medicine and public health as separate activities. They really are part of the same fabric that we need to create if we're going to have a healthy society. We need to continue to have our efforts based on good, sound science. We need the epidemiology. We need the research. We need the good data collection. We need to focus on the health of individuals and populations, because the health of populations affect the health of individuals within that population. We need to focus on what people's individual choices are, but also we need to say, what do we as a society need to make available so people can make healthy choices? We need to have a broad definition of health, because we understand that education and transportation also affect an individual's emotional and physical health. We need to have to work with as many disciplines as possible who will bring a piece of the puzzle, so that we have the specialists, but we also have the generalists that bring things together. We need to focus on a whole range, from disease prevention, health promotion, injury protection, and treatment and rehabilitation, because all of those are necessary in our society. We need to collaborate. We need to look at both the short term and the long term. We need to use the dollars that we have in the most effective way possible. And we need to make sure that everybody benefits in our society, that everybody gets their basic needs met. So that's what we're really seeing, where the Minnesota Department of Health is a place where we can really merge medicine and public health in a way that is unique. And that's why this sort of org chart, as you may, of how we look at the world is really going to be part of what we will be presenting to you over the next several months and talking with you about, because this is sort of the framework. So with all of that, I do have a few just priorities. You know, as a new commissioner, as I said, I've been really impressed with the quality of the State Health Department, the Minnesota Department of Health, and what we need to do is maintain that premier status and actually enhance what's going on. We are a leader in the country in terms of public health, and I think we should continue to be a leader. We also have to make sure that we enhance that public health infrastructure, which, if it disappears, will really reflect on all of us throughout the state. We need to look at that at both the state and at the local level. We need to really advance health reform, because we need to use the health reform activities to really have something that benefits all people, and we need to really focus on eliminating health disparities as one of the priorities. So I think, as I started out, that health is a public good, and I think public health is one of the best investments that government can make. It affects everything. And in fact, it's a really good investment for Minnesota, because only about 14% of the Minnesota Department of Health's budget comes from the general fund. Really, other sources really fund the bulk of what the Minnesota Department of Health does. And certainly by preventing problems before they occur, will help us not only save lives and keep us healthier, but it'll save money. We rank as one of the healthiest states, and I hope that we can continue to maintain that healthy status and improve it. And public health approach, it finally is, I think, essential if we're going to really have health reform be effective in this state. So we want to be partnering with our sister agencies in Commerce and Human Services to really bring that public health perspective to everything that we do. So with that, I'm open for questions. I do have some of my staff here that would be available if there are any other questions that I can't answer.
Great. Dr. Ellinger, thank you for your presentation, first of all. We have Representative Grunhagen and then Representative Liebling.
Mr. Chair, Commissioner Ellinger, just back to the SHIP program. You know, those are laudable goals. Do you know what the annual budget is of the SHIP program right now?
I believe it's
Dr. Ellinger.
Yeah, Mr. Chair, Representative, I believe it's $47 million in the biennium.
2 years.
2 years.
Okay, Mr. Chair, just a follow-up question, Commissioner.
Yes, Ingers. Representative Grunhanger.
How do we objectively measure the results of the goals? I guess is my question. I mean, we want efforts to reduce tobacco and obesity. Focus on policy systems and environment changes to improve health and reduce health care costs. Nobody disagrees with that. But my question would be, you know, as a representative, how do I look at this and evaluate this program in terms of spending $47 million and what are the objective results from this? Mm-hmm. And I know you've only been, what, 2 or 3 weeks?
Well, I've been here for 6 days.
Oh, 6 days. I've been here 3 weeks. Between the two of us, I'm hoping we can come up with an answer on this. Okay.
Dr. Ellinger.
Mr. Chair, Representative, I certainly would have one of my staff who've been working with the SHIP program. I could give you a general answer, but I think Craig Acom could give you a more specific answer on how those things are evaluated for the SHIP program.
Mr. Acuff, welcome to the committee. If you could.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. For the record, my name is Craig Acom. I'm the Assistant Commissioner at the Department of Health. And Representative, to answer your question, the SHIP program was really started, as I think it was said earlier, for a long-term goal in the reduction of obesity and tobacco to help bring down the health care cost curve with the rising costs. We're looking at 9 to 10% annual increases in health care costs. This was an opportunity to get upstream. And so the program really started just last year, and right now we're working on evaluation methods with partners and outside consultants to, you know, critically identify the success of the program here in the state. I would say, though, that the program is based off evidence-based interventions that have been proven through research and practice around the country over the last 10 years. It's modeled after a CDC program called Steps to a Healthier U.S., and Minnesota is the first one to take that research and apply it on a statewide basis here in Minnesota with those expected goals.
Mr. Representative Grunhagen.
Mr. Chair, and I didn't catch your last name.
Craig Acom.
Acom?
Acom.
Yeah. Acom? Mm-hmm. Okay. Oh, any objective data that you can get me, either from the national program that it was modeled after or from this program, would be sincerely appreciated. I mentioned this before, but I've been on a school board for about, you know, before being a state rep for about 16 years, and a couple things I noticed about government. Number one, they always have laudable goals, but in terms of objective data, measuring the results of those goals is sometimes hard to come by. Number two, whenever you plant or start another a government program, it always begins to grow, okay? And what I mean by that, in terms of the cost growing, and sometimes the results don't grow as fast as much as the cost, and in some cases it's hard to measure the effect. So, you know, I appreciate the efforts, and I think the goals are laudable, and I'm sure everybody's well-intended, but as a representative, those are two things I sincerely appreciate seeing, because we're spending $47 million. We should, within a reasonable period of time, and I know, well, long-term it's going to get better. Well, you know, we've got to deal with today also, and I just appreciate, as soon as possible, some type of objective data to show the results of what our goals are. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
And Mr. Chair, Representative, we'd be happy to provide that information that we have to date. Just for the benefit of the committee members, I would remind everyone that even though $47 million sounds like a significant investment, it's only $3.83 per person that we're investing in the health of individuals here in Minnesota. And the long-term goals, certainly, it's really is an ounce of prevention's worth a pound of cure. And we believe that this investment, based on the research, based on the data, is going to produce significant savings and a healthier population.
Mr. Acom, I'd also point out, Representative Grunhagen and members, that one of the unique and I think strong aspects of the SHIP program is the partnering with community-based initiatives, that this is not just a state program. And that was very intentional because we realized that grassroots efforts tend to be more sustainable and are achieve better participation rates. So I understand we have that for a good portion of the SHIP program, and that's one unique aspect that I think is going to help it succeed.
Mr. Chair, that's an excellent point and very accurate. It's really based on local control, local decision-making, and local involvement, and that's been a very successful part of the program.
And, Mr. Chair, following up on that, having worked with the SHIP program before coming here at Hennepin County in Minneapolis, I've seen how it has actually changed the way the healthcare community is looking at illness and disease and prevention. It's getting new partners involved and thinking in a new way. And I think we can also, not only our own evaluation program, but what CDC did with the Steps to a Healthier U.S., the research data that they have with that, upon which the SHIP program is built, can certainly help answer some of the questions of the representative.
Representative Grenhagen.
Mr. Chair, Mr. Acom, did I pronounce that correctly?
You did, thank you.
Yeah, I guess the other thing is, just a firm conviction and belief I have is government tends to be the most expensive and inefficient way to deliver any product or service. That's just a general principle. So when I look at this program, I'm just wondering if there's other states that are addressing these same concerns, only they're doing it through the private sector and the charities rather than with an additional government program. If, there's 50 different states out there, I'm sure each state is dealing with financial or deficit situations, almost all of them, I think, except for one. But there must be, the nice thing about 50 states, you have 50 different experiments. And if there's states that are doing this other than with the government program and getting similar or equal results, I'd sure appreciate knowing that.
And Mr. Chair, Representative, there are no other states that are doing this on a statewide basis that I'm aware of. And Minnesota has really been leading the charge nationally and setting an example. I think that the great experiment is happening right here in the state that the rest of the nation is looking toward to see our outcomes, our results, to know whether that can be a model that other states can adopt.
Very good. Representative Liebling and then Representative Norton.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair, and that was a really interesting discussion. It wasn't the reason I raised my hand in the first place, but just before I get to my other question, I just want to say, the problem with our process here is often that prevention is hard to quantify. It doesn't show up very well on a fiscal note, and we have this discussion a lot around a lot of different things that we can't build in the savings that we know will come or that we hope will come, and it is a problem, but... I don't know that I don't agree with that last comment about government being the most inefficient and ineffective way, or I'm sure I can't quote you, but that's okay. But let's just say that there's a lot of disagreement on that, and let me move on from there. But we certainly, that's not something that we all accept by any means. But what I wanted to ask or to say to Dr. Ellinger is, first of all, I've always had a lot of respect and appreciation for the Department of Health. I think we in Minnesota really take it for granted, and it's an excellent organization with lots of very dedicated, very professional employees in it. And I wanted to ask you, because on this committee we also deal with the Department of Human Services, which is much, much bigger. And just to give us, if you could just sort of give us a little perspective on the relative size of the Department of Health, and just this isn't the Finance Committee, but just the relative budget, and just so that we kind of understand. I think this is a very effective agency that works not very big compared to all the things you've laid out, and I know you've only laid out some of the things that it does. So could you just give us that perspective a little bit so we get some frame for the relative size?
Dr. Ellinger.
Mr. Chair, Representative Liebling. Well, I'll give you my 10,000-foot level. I do have the Chief Financial Officer if you'd like a little bit more. But the Minnesota Department of Health has about 1,400 employees, is responsible for a little over $1 billion, only about 75 million per year comes from the general fund. Much of it comes from federal grants. A lot of it comes from the WIC program, and then some other special governmental rate kinds of things. But I can't speak for the size of DHS, but I think we're a little sister. If you'd like some more detail, I could certainly have.
I have Representative Norton, Representative McElfatrick, and Representative McDonald. Representative Norton.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you for the presentation, and I join the others in saying kudos to the Department of Health. You've walked into a primo spot there, and I think you'll enjoy it. I've had, years before I even served in the legislature, the opportunity to work with the folks in the public in public health and in the Department of Health, and have been impressed with every employee. It's really been remarkable. I did want to address, I've been involved in the SHIP group, and Rochester was a Steps to a Healthier Minnesota CDC grantee, and was one of the four cities in the state that this whole model came from. And there were just a couple points I want to make. One is the projects that the local areas choose from are able to be made from within a menu of things that are proven to work. So they come to us already. You can't just do anything willy-nilly. There actually is I don't even know what you want to call it, but a menu of things you can choose from, and we know they work. They're tested and already proven to work. How you implement them locally, you have some flexibility. So that was part of the STEPS and the SHIP model that was very positive. And the other piece, and I know our local folks, Representative Quam came to a SHIP meeting, I believe, and Representative Benson and others from our area, and heard what great work is being done in our part of the state. I can't speak to every part of the state, but I certainly know in Olmsted County that the work that's being done is with the Chamber of Commerce, with Mayo Clinic, with local businesses who are making the changes at a local level. So it's not just state money being thrown around. It's actually state money that's used to bring in the support of many of our local businesses for better outcomes. And the one piece that we just got in our mail within the last week wasn't specific to SHIP, but the work prior to SHIP with some state money, which was the tobacco reduction. There was a huge study, and the results were, I think, put in your mailboxes as they were mine, to show that when the state does use money, when public health does get involved, we can affect change. And the reduction of smokers in the state of Minnesota using some of that state tobacco money was quite remarkable. And unfortunately, you know, most of that money is gone, and we are seeing increased smoking in high school students again, which is a bit concerning. But you know, I guess I just would have to say, look at go back to your local community, find out what's happening in your county with the SHIP money, because each county is different, but the work is with schools, is with business, and is with government. It's a partnership.
Chair? I would just point out briefly, I think it's a legitimate question to ask what we get for the money we spend. I'm sure Dr. Ellinger would agree with that as well, but a lot of frankly, I think good work has been done around the SHIP program already, but what sort of results we get out of it will be an important thing to think in terms of. I've got Representative McElfatrick and Representative McDonald, and then we can come back here. So, Representative McElfatrick.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Commissioner Ellinger, and this may have been a question for Mr. Acom as well. My community up around Grand Rapids has been very active in promoting the SHIP program in the community. I'm a great believer in shared positive experiences and shared successes. I'm curious to know, is there an active format for communities to share their successes, or maybe things that didn't work as well for them? One community may not be exactly the same as another, but regionally, you know, there might be things that they could share that would make the individual community programs more effective.
Dr. Ellinger.
Mr. Chair, Representative, I'm certainly aware of some of the activities where there has been sharing about what's going on related to tobacco use on college campuses through the SHIP program. There's been a lot of collaboratives. There have been people who have actually been out looking at what works and what doesn't work and spreading that information around. So I'm familiar with the tobacco area. Maybe Mr. Acom could comment on some of the other areas where there is sharing of information of what's working and what's not.
Thank you, Commissioner, and Mr. Chair,
Mr.
Representative. Because SHIP is a statewide program, all 87 counties plus all 9 tribes are participating, there's a lot of sharing that's going on. And so there's a lot of opportunity for sharing. As Representative Norton's mentioned, there's a lot of interventions that can be chosen from that, because of local decision-making, local needs, local partners, Not every community is doing the same thing, but the communities that are able to share information about when they are doing something with their schools, for example, they're able to talk to other communities around the state that are working with schools and find out what works, what doesn't, and adjust. And the program has really benefited from that kind of information sharing and that kind of collaboration and partnership.
Mr. Aikman, could I ask, I mean, does the Department of Health envision posting things on a website or something like that? It occurs to me it would be really neat to be able to see some of the models that are working around the state so that people could kind of see the synergy and maybe grab best practices and that sort of thing. Is that something that you're thinking about doing? Or,
Mr. Chair, that is something we're thinking of doing. And you know, the other thing I would just mention is because a lot of these interventions were meant to have long-term benefits, some of them are working quicker than others and making changes that we can identify and measure. I think when you think about what's the time scale, there might be interventions we can take that really have effects and proven results within a year. Others might take 4 years before we really start to see the benefits of those. But again, you know, our goal is really to try to implement local community change and action through systems, policy, and environmental change with the SHIP program.
Representative McDonald.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Commissioner, since we're speaking of prevention, I heard on the news several months ago that 2 glasses of wine per day increases your life expectancy. So since you're a great authority, can you verify that for us? Not that I want to know personally, but people in my district and household, perhaps.
Dr. Ellinger.
Mr. Chair, Representative, there is one rule in medicine and health is everything in moderation. And certainly the data have shown that a certain wine can add to one's health. And on the other side, if you use inappropriately, it can detract from your health. So the research is there that shows it can be healthy if used appropriately.
Representative Grunhagen and then Representative Hundley. Representative Grunhagen.
Yeah, Mr. Chairman, just an observation, and you know, after being the number of years I've been on the school board, I've become a little bit of a skeptic on things. Because so often I've observed that wherever government money shows up for expenditure, there's a lot of fine-sounding rhetoric that goes with the expenditure of that money. But when you ask for objective results, they tend to have the answer, well, they're way off in the future, or we can't really provide that. So, you know, a person go broke with good intentions and spending money on things without objective results. Now, it's been stated on here that these are proven, SHIP uses proven techniques or approaches to these problems. Okay, if they're proven, then there should be objective results. And I know I'm going to sound like a broken record, but again, if that type of information is available either on a national or state level, I'd sincerely appreciate it. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Representative Hundley.
Mr. Chair and members and Commissioner, in terms of sharing the information, there's 4 counties in northeastern Minnesota that are cooperating. They basically have one program. They all work together. It was funded by the Department of Health jointly with these 4 communities, and what they have done is they have all kinds of different things. Each community decided what they would do best, and they meet at least quarterly to discuss with their other members about what's going on in their community, what works, what doesn't work, and so there is a lot of sharing of activities. One of the things that they're doing in more than one county up the 4 counties is working with small businesses to work on the healthy behaviors of their employees. So there is a business component. And I will say that the SHIP program was part of Governor Pawlenty's Healthcare Transformation Task Force, which was primarily business people. And businesses, as I said earlier, are extremely interested in the healthy behaviors of their employees and are willing to put a lot of money into it. And what that Governor's Pawlenty's Transformation Task Force did was recommend the CDC program move statewide, which we have done. And as I said, a big part of that program is the measurement of the results. That's one of the things that I insisted on. We're not just giving them money. They have to show that what they're doing works. And, Commissioner, I hope you can convince the governor to put SHIP in his budget, since the money runs out on July 1st. And my last comment is, if you want to talk about effective use of government money in health care, you have to understand it wasn't until the 1930s that you were better off going to a doctor than not going to a doctor. And yet the life expectancy greatly increased, and that's because government cleaned up the drinking waters and the sewers. And I don't know anybody who's done a more efficient job than government in taking care of our drinking water and our sewers.
Representative Vabler.
Thanks. On a whole different topic, I think this has been a good discussion. Can you give us kind of an idea of what you think you're doing with health reform this year? If you think or where you think that might be coming from? Do you have any early thoughts you can offer us about that so we can kind of plan for it? Thanks.
Dr. Ellinger.
Mr. Chair, Representative Vabler, certainly we're moving ahead with implementing the Accountable Care Act, which we've been given permission from the governor's office to start working on. We're working with the Department of Human Services, the Department of Commerce, the management and budget area to really look at what our opportunities are to go after planning dollars for the exchange, trying to work on simplification and efficiency in the public programs. We've been doing a lot of work with healthcare homes and provider peer grouping and a lot of the quality indicators. All of those are being brought forth to form our discussion with our sister agencies on how to best move forward in implementing the Accountable Care Act in Minnesota.
Representative Vabler.
So I guess, do you foresee any more legislative action this session coming out of your department? Or you're going to kind of catch your breath and work. I mean, you gave quite a good list of things to work on. It isn't like you're lacking for work, but if you don't know, you can say you don't know, but thanks.
Dr. Ellinger.
Mr. Chair, Representative Ava, I know that down the road there will be some legislative requirements for us to come forward. Right now, we're still learning how, what's there, what we have to do to really implement the Medicaid expansion, to go after some dollars for the planning for the exchange. And I know that down the road we will need some legislative things. At this point in time, those certainly aren't on the table, as far as I know.
Two thoughts that come to mind briefly are the word sustainability and the lead that you talked about, Dr. Ellinger, that Minnesota has in terms of health and wellness in this state. I think those are two things we want to keep in mind around that implementation, if possible. I've got Representative Barrett. Representative Barrett.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Doctor. Great testimony. Appreciate you coming in today. Looking at slide 2, looking at the top causes of death, we all looked at that, and certainly that tells a story that no one can deny. But there's another area I think that may not be a primary cause of death, but certainly secondary, and that's mental health. And so I'm wondering if you could share with us your thoughts about mental health, some of the causes, where we're at in our society, some of the ways to better diagnose and treat mental health in our state.
Dr. Ellinger.
Mr. Chair, Representative, well, mental health certainly is a huge issue in our state. Coming from the university where I dealt with mental health among college students, it was just as the tip of the iceberg. It's an area where we need to do a lot more work in terms of identifying what are the stressors that people are under. Are there some preventive approaches to reducing mental illness? But certainly we have to find ways to identify individuals early on who are suffering from mental health issues and get them into appropriate evaluation and treatment. Right now the system, the number of providers out there to to deal with mental health issues is inadequate. We need to find new ways to do that. We need to look at our primary care facilities to see if they can better deal with mental health issues at the lower level of mental health issues, and use our psychiatrists, you know, really for the most acute and chronic and complex issues. We need to look at ways to use our school systems to help identify students who are under a lot of stress and have mental health issues, and then get them into some services. So it's a complex issue. It is certainly one that is on our radar of how we're going to need to address, and we're going to have to find some unique ways and some innovative ways to deal with this issue.
Representative Barrett. Just a follow-up, if I may. So it's a tough question, and if you don't want to answer it, I understand. How would you rank mental health in the top, if not causes of death, certainly quality of life issues in our state as it relates to tobacco, alcohol, and other areas? Yeah. Certainly alcohol is related, obviously.
Mr. Chair, Representative, mental health plays a big component in almost all of the causes of death. Certainly in alcohol, people use alcohol as a way to deal with their mental health issues. We know that suicide is a major cause of death for the elderly, one of the leading causes, and certainly of younger folks. So I don't have the exact numbers for the entire population. I do know that for the 18 to 30-year-old range, suicide is the third leading cause of death. So it's a major issue, and it affects a lot of the other factors, either as a precipitating cause or coming after with mental illness, coming after developing a chronic illness. There are other, it's part of all of the health issues that we have.
Good discussion. Dr. Ellinger, thank you so much for your presentation and to your staff for being here. We've got a lot of work ahead. Yes. Look forward to working with you. Okay. Members, if there's nothing else for the good of the order, we'll call the meeting adjourned.